Then he got out for only a couple of months, and he was rearrested for an assault and robbery charge. And that's a picture of him at 21 when he's been just been picked up on the assault and robbery charge.
In the New York Herald, November 26, year 1911, there is an account of the hanging of three men.
It's a picture of Willie in his late 20s in the visitor's room at one of the many prisons in New York State that he's been in.
They died for the murder of Sir Edmund William Godfrey, husband, father, pharmacist, and all-around gentleman resident of Greenberry Hill, London. Greenberry Hill, London.
This is a big commercial corporation. It's a fairly new corporation that's been kind of secretive about what they're developing.
He was murdered by three vagrants whose motive was simple robbery. They were identified as Joseph Green, Stanley Berry, Daniel Hill. Green, Barry Hill. And I would like to think this was only a matter of chance.
In prison in that picture.
Where was he born?
Well, he was born in Harlem, but he's in prison in that picture. A normal delivery, and as a child, what was exceptional about him was that first, he was very bright. Second, that he always seemed to be getting in trouble, and his mother couldn't understand it. But she did frequently, when she looked at him, he reminded her of Willie's father, of her husband.
Any pornographic film, if you'll excuse my using that expression, that I've seen recently. What is it that sets that film aside from the run-of-the-mill film of that genre? Showing.
Well, I guess you haven't seen very many of love films lately, Joe.
Pornographic film.
In this big game that we play, life. It's not what you hope for. It's not what you deserve. It's what you take.
I'm Frank T.J. Mackey, a master of the muffin, and author of The Seduce and Destroy System, now available to you on audio and video cassette.
Hi, we'll be talking to Scholar of the comic book.
Pornographic film. Pornographic film.
Imagine.
Yeah, I know you're excited.
I am.
You know, Wild Backwards is wild. Did you know that?
How will the internet affect the distribution and perhaps ultimately the sale of comic art?
I'm Dr. J. This week, Changer for Radio, we'll be talking trivial color of the comic book.
How will the internet?
Upside down is mom, and mom upside down is dad's favorite thing.
And she would say to Willie, when you grow up, you're going to be bad. You're going to be real bad, just like your father.
How will the internet affect the distribution and perhaps ultimately the sale?
Pornographic film.
Well, I guess you haven't seen very many of
It's hard for me to really referee that question. I know that, again, a lot of universal truths are the same cloth, and I'm really not that familiar with Huna that I could referee such a question. I'm sorry. It's an interesting point of view, but since I've never heard that before today, I'm surprised that nobody else would have made the connection if it were indeed true. You know what I mean? I don't know. That may be possible. What I'd love to do is get a hold of his books and write Rob, because I know that Rob would have records. Rob kept records of everything.
Seduce and Destroy System, now available to you on audio and video cassette.
The ideologies through which they try to make sense of it all range from British-style industrial-grade Trotskyism to American-style black helicopter libertarianism.
Seduce and Destroy will teach you the techniques to have any hard body blonde just dripping it to wet your dock.
And what I'm doing, Art, in my new book is not just retelling this general tale, but what I said to myself is, if we would know, like a watchmaker, who, if he knows how the watch was put together, knows how to repair it.
Financing a company called Liberia Agriculture Company, and the Liberia Agriculture Company is engaged in a rubber plantation projects, and the IFC is funding them this time to the tune of $3.5 million to engage, among other things, into logging activities. And we think IFC funding company, multinational companies, to engage in logging activities is criminal, because it's actually against World Bank policy, and we think that should be made known to the public.
Eve of the world tomorrow, and you'd better know what is coming and what it all means.
She didn't at first tell him what his father had done. She wanted to protect him from that terrible truth.
After 3 days and two nights of driving, they arrived in a land of cypress stumps that stretched as far as the eye can see. In the middle of this plain, a single tree was still standing. A corrugated tin shack leaned against it. It was the house of the giant of the clear-cut forests. No sooner had they stopped than the giant came roaring out, holding a buzzing Black & Decker chainsaw.
I'll cut you both into little pieces if you don't answer three questions.
Mom and Joy agreed to this.
Who killed all the fairy tales? TV?
Said Almond Joy, who by now had guessed that these brothers were rather single-minded.
Wrong.
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 The correct answer is the military-industrial complex. But since the way that the military-industrial complex kills tales is through television, I'll allow you this answer.
Almond Joy didn't quite see it, but then he hadn't done as much reading as the giant, whose shack was lined with pages from Das Kapital by Karl Marx and back issues of the Wall Street Journal.
Second question. Where was the spotted owl crowd when my trees needed them?
Watching TV?
Asked Almond Joy.
Yeah, that's right. But don't formulate your answers in the form of questions, or I'll take points off the top of your head with this chainsaw. Hey, here's the last question. What happened to all the egrets, storks, and owls that used to live in those trees that were cut down?
They became the subject of nature shows on TV.
The giant was very pleased. He served Almond Joy the best food he had. Nutria fries cooked in motor oil with little condiment packages from McDonald's and Taco Bell. He explained that he had long ago eaten the burgers and the tacos that those condiments came with, but he had saved the packages for a day just like this.
His imagination ran wild, and he began to wonder what his father had done. And when he was about six, he saw a picture on his grandmother's dresser of a man in prison fatigues. And
the big questions about history and economics fuel the adventures of angry white guys and angry black women with guns.
My particular take on foreign affairs, seconded by other people who have come in and out of several administrations like Elliot Abrams and William Kristol, they have a very, very particular take on the world situation, on the role of the United States, and a particular focus on the Middle East.
His actions tip scales bigger than they know. Their world is one where the New World Order is coming to get you, with black helicopters and men in black and orbital gun control lasers.
His grandmother said, "That's your father." Dresser of a man in prison fatigues.
Pete, can you hear me?
Yes, I can read you over.
You have to stop you. I mean, just constantly talk to me when we stop.
Larry, what's under you right now?
Okay, I'm moving away from Marine Land, from Palos Verdes or whatever. I'm moving away from the tower, and what's directly under me is fog, and I can see the ocean, but I am moving slightly away from it. So I'm picking up an easterly wind current. Over.
The book sold over 1 million copies. Hundreds of clubs sprang up around the United States to further Bellamy's vision of socialism.
Those people with their plans have come to power. Those people, their plans, in particular, take on foreign affairs, seconded by other people who have come in and out of several administrations, like Elliot Abrams and William Kristol. They have very particular take on the world situation, on the role of the United States, and a particular focus on the Middle East. Their plans those people those people with their plans have come to power.
And a national political party went on to win hundreds of thousands of votes.
The title of the album is Get Ready. So it could mean anything or nothing.
If you read Bob Woodward's book, for instance, you see that in the deliberations right after September 11th, the issue of invading Iraq was raised.
With my in-laws, who are a lot of fun, if you like being in a vault with them. And I don't know what that means, but thank you for laughing. And we went there, and it was a beautiful country. I learned quite a bit. We went during Christmas, so there were like Christmas lights on the pyramids and everything, right. Which is kind of a joke, but not quite.
I was practically in the forum, Bob Woodward reports. They say, well, do we have to do Afghanistan first and Iraq second, or do we do Iraq first and Afghanistan second? And
we out there we consider ourselves to be in the front line of this struggle because we live in communities that are actually affected by these World Bank policies.
Did you realize that you've got the street to 180 very quickly. So you whisk your steam cleaning machine right back up to you all the way to 180. You go right up to the front door, and you push the button.
Enigmatic dream idiocy.
Modernity, modernity, Water Lane, 0171 5599. Dream Sat May, Tents and Tomatoes at Blackpool, where Jimmy Bloomfield has been brought back to host jousts in modernity. One of the many football grounds that have been converted to hold this revived sport.
From today and forthwith, Jousts at Modernity.
Joust in Modernity. Charred landscape. Watching the female bouts at the beginning on the tent-bedecked terraces. I exclaim out aloud, too drafty in here. Those girls will certainly catch their death of cold. Arm shoved to left by bearded steward. But every movement, my companion catches, reprimands me. I am completely deaf, so cannot gauge my own voice volume.
Large tomatoes and gold and beige striped tent plunked on brand new soccer terracing seem to symbolise a clean-shaven, say, ye decadent.
The Lancashire Northern Western Quarter has seemed to materialise overnight. Its citizens plump voyeuristic. Slowly they watch every movement by anybody or anything.
And taught her to associate the bumps on the letters with the object.
Memorandum, which has been widely circulated, proposing the invasion of Iraq, that dates back, I believe, to 1998. In the Clinton era, and that was rejected. Education that I feel I owe as much to film as I do to literature. The issue of people with their plans have come to power.
This is probably the peak of influence of utopian socialist novels. In England, H.G. Wells worked out his own visions of utopian socialism, but also of disastrous authoritarianisms in his novels. And he is remembered more for the latter.
I bless my uncanny ability to blend. My friend, Matthew, is not so lucky. His wife is home at last from hospital.
It is his first day out, in weeks, always energetic, and too sharp, and is obviously thought drunk.
Thank you.
did you get the jokes that you use during that period?
I think you steal mainly when you first start.
If you read Bob Woodward's book, for instance, you see that in the deliberations right after September 11th...
Like everybody does. You listen, you subscribe to, I suppose, like everybody did at one time or another, Billy Glason. You read all of the gag files. You know, you can go to libraries, actually, and find jokes that they're still using today.
The issue of invading Iraq was raised.
Gradually, she began to learn to manipulate the letters. It was a complex process.
Practically in the form that Bob Woodward reports, they say, well, do we have to do Afghanistan first and Iraq second, or do we do Iraq first and Afghanistan second?
After World War II, Orwell's 1984 became a Western archetype.
You know, you watch Rowan and Martin, and they're laughing now, actually. And they're doing stuff to a new audience that haven't heard the stuff. They're doing the old blackouts, the old crossovers, the old two-way jokes, three-way jokes. But you have an entirely new audience.
Take it on head first with the skills that I will teach you at work and say, Noah!
No!
You will not control me!
Noah!
No! You will not take my soul!
Noah!
No! You will not win this game! Because it is a game, guys. You want to think it's not, huh? You want to think it's not? You go back to the schoolyard and you have that crush on big-titted Mary Jane. Respect the cock. You are inventing this thought. I am the one who's in charge. I am the one who says yes.
No.
Now.
Memorandum, which has been widely circulated, proposing the invasion of Iraq. That date back, I believe, to 1998.
Of the dangers of totalitarianism. And in the 1960s, Ayn Rand gathered a small but widely influential following with her radically anarcho-capitalist novels.
Thank you.
in the Clinton era, and that was rejected. Education that I feel I owe as much to film as I do to literature, a portrayal of people, understanding of the world, narrative pleasure, visual pleasure, pleasure of the senses. They're wonderful filmmakers now. Let me think of some filmmakers I particularly like.
Do you tend to choose independence or?
Well, I tend to choose what I like. I mean, I guess in some cases, I suppose they'd be called independence. I mean, I don't have any particular genre that I like. Like one of the American films that I love the most in recent years was a kind of animated film called Waking Life by a director named Richard Linklater. I think my favorite directors right now are not Americans. I love a Russian director named Alexander Sokurov, who has a film that's playing now called Russian Ark, which is just an... let me put it this way. I like unique films. I like films that are over the top. I like films that are, I guess some people would say, very weird. This Sokurov film, for instance, it's 90 minutes long. It's all one shot and has 3,000 people in it. It's a one-of-a-kind film. It's not at all typical of his other films. I mean, there are even other films I like better. But he's a Russian director. He's absolutely amazing. He's not very well known. This is the first film that's had some kind of breakthrough in theatrical distribution. But you know, the audience for foreign films in this country is relatively small. But then they exist in DVDs and they get shown on TV and cable and so on. I love a Hungarian director named Bela Tarr. I love a director from Hong Kong named Wong Kar-wai. I love some
John,
Iranian
does a comedian's
films, some
pride
films,
or vanity play any
Iran.
Part in being able to evoke laughter from an audience?
Abbas Kiarostami, whose films
well, I think anybody in the show business who appears on a stage has got a certain vanity and ego to fulfill, and that's the desire to be
Samira, I believe Samira Makhmalbaf.
Just as that simple. You wouldn't be up on that stage.
There is
most people, your
a terrific Taiwanese director named Edward Yang,
who
did a film called Yi Yi a few years ago. And then I see a lot of films over and over again. The way I read poetry again or look at paintings. I have this series at Japan Film Society. At the Japan Society, which has a wonderful film program of Japanese films. A lot of them are from the 50s and 60s. And I love their humanity and their portraits of sadness and complicated relationships. I guess what I miss in a lot of Hollywood films is just that kind of going inside people.
Contemporary science fiction is replete with small bands of heroes fighting dictatorship and oppression.
Let's talk about the birth of an obsession.
It is animal. We are men.
Sure, she's scared. But let's just examine the obsession for now. And the agent that solidified it. An arrangement of concrete and steel. A manifestation that spins, yet doesn't move. A divine pattern. A whirl of enchantment. A whirl of enchantment. And not the healthy cry of a newborn, but an ailing squeal. Not a vigorous young screech, but a queasy wail. But let's talk about the birth of an obsession. It's not just simple obsession, though. I'd call it a new form of life, a different way through the door. It's a new path. A spore. So imagine this, A careless diver, bulging at the pores. Come over here. I want you to listen to something. That spiraling ramp, right there in front of you. It's caused a lot of sorrow, and it's caused a lot of heartache, too. Its foundations run for blocks in every direction. It rotates endlessly off into space by implication. It's a physical construct, becoming a mental object of such staggering complexity that all she can do in its presence is fall to the couch and weep. A cement edifice occupying such a large portion of her mind that there's no room left for processing speech or food or time or sleep or visual information. A narcotic coil of lime. I'm talking about obsessive thoughts. I'm talking about obsessive thoughts regarding an obese rendering, if I may be allowed to mix the fat and the tallow of a single experience. Objectively, it's massive, but trivial. Subjectively, it is staggering. Its possibilities are endless, but tightly constrained. It could be anything, but it isn't just anything. It's that thing. Let's witness the aftermath of a late-night parking ramp argument. Hear some yelling, but still sit in the car. Fiddle with dials. Get out. Look down the ramp toward the guard booth, and a man looks back. Kind of familiar, isn't he? Kind of vile. Kind of bulged. Kind of self-indulged. Here's where everything begins to accelerate downward. She thinks she might know him, and she thinks he's cute, but his head takes a very, very inappropriately long time to swing up from looking down at the ground up to looking down the ramp at her. Let me say that again, because your orientation is critical here if you're going to follow any of this, if you're going to follow the path from the fist. His head takes a very, very inappropriately long time to swing up from looking down at the ramp up to looking down the ramp at her. Get out and walk up the ramp toward the guard as he walks away. It's the camp of the flirtation. It's slant plus elevation. It's the blood of the altercation. Enough of that. She got gaga over him. How does something bypass articulation and take over your mind from the inside? Let's walk over to the guard booth and watch it happen. What happens when you can't stop thinking about something? Let's keep walking toward the guard booth and see it happen. Imagine the same thing over and over again. Imagine the blood stain, the rust stain. That weird rust stain. We're almost to the guard booth now where we'll watch it happen. I can't believe we're going to watch it happen because someone should stop it. I wish I could stop it, and I could stop it, but at this point I won't. There. Ramp guard knocked motionless. A blonde man walks to the elevator. I don't know if he saw her. I don't know if she knows him. I don't know what they argued about. I don't know why he did it. I don't know if he's breathing. I don't know why she likes him. I don't know all the answers, but let me try to explain by saying, there it was in front of her, that weird rust stain. More like a brain than a stain. More like the swishing brain of her soul than either brain or stain. She urged herself on and on, but pale at his too strong visual squeeze now focused in on her. Squeezed eyes tightly shut, flooded like the car trunks banging rapidly open and shut all around her. There it was in front of her, that weird rust stain and that terrible, indelible image staggering under its own oafish weight. A seven-level parking ramp centrally designed around a bank of glass guard booths. Nearby the booth, dangerous and anarchic action spreads federally out and angled downward, across and on forward under the cement floor. It quickly became clear that night that booth guard wasn't ever coming back soon. She said something to herself as she opened the car door. All directions merged downward along this ramp floor. They abounded and they abounded uneasily around and around the deafening ramp floor. She stepped red outside her car. Even earlier, from her own bad antics, she was shaking. She thought of the familiar blue happy hours nearby, of the inner heart sinks and tangles surrounding her in and out around the office ramp bar. She'd always hated this place, that guy, that show, this word. All auditory excitement vanished during the talk show portion of a show left over on the booth guards tipped black and white. Now she just wanted to hurry and get alone home through the gauged distance between her and the blood spots several dozen yards away that she just about hadn't seen yet. She whirled and whirled to the spot. All eyes flew shut, then banging up open as she walked down toward the guard booth, clenchedly vocalizing a self-defense mantra. 10 yards from the door, she spotted a white entrance, now 10 spaces away from the back front entrance of level 7, now dangled attractively from a pursuing whisper. She felt frozen to the spot and observed. She wanted to run, but her movements were codified with fear. But there it was again for the first time, that weird rust stain. Even now, even as we take this first step, there's something inherent in the physical nature of the ramp. An imaginary tumor, making emotion and action and sound and structure coalesce in her mind as a consolidated thing. A certain torque on the cochlea. In other words, she isn't obsessed with the horrible, horrible events of that evening.
Sphinx. We went to the back of the Sphinx, but nobody goes back there. You know why? Because it's Sphinx back there.
And occasionally it works out visions of libertarian societies. The state is usually portrayed as either tyrannical or irrelevant, and there is rarely any serious politics or collective organization discussed at all.
The Hollywood films are so often targeted for a very young audience that's looking for hyper sensations. And sure, I like some of those things too. I also like Japanese anime. You know, that's pure sensation. But I like films for grown-ups, and I like films that you can re-see. In a way, what I feel about films is what I feel about literature, that I don't want to see a movie that I wouldn't want to see again. So ask that. No, I definitely will go along. First of all, I can't always get somebody to come and play because I'm always calling people up and saying, listen, I'm going to, there's a Fassbinder retrospective right now at Film Forum. I'm going down at 5 o'clock to, you know, oh, I'm sorry, I have to wash my hair, or I have it up to do something, or I haven't finished my work. And I say, oh, come on, do it later. You know, I'm, you know what Oscar Wilde said, I can resist everything except temptation. So I'm very easy to tempt away from my work.
back of the Sphinx, but nobody goes back there.
If we would study those ancient texts in detail, step by step,
It was a complex process. When she began using the finger alphabet and began to really see that she could converse, then she just took off. And there was no stopping her. She would go all day long demanding, "What's this? What's this? What does this mean?" Her curiosity was exhausting.
He asked who it was, and his grandmother said, "That's your father. He's in prison. He killed two men."
So he would know if it was, you know. Yeah, I'd be very interested in seeing the title. Thank you. Moving along here. Basically, do we know what time we're supposed to wrap it in? Because you. Oh, okay. Well, in that case, what I'll do is I'll put a sock in it and wish you all a very good evening. Thanks so much for coming.
Limed with pain. And now he bent over my helpless head and bit his own wrist. The blood flowed down upon my shirt and coat, and I think that I knew what he meant to do as if I'd been waiting for years.
Oh, yes. I've noticed on a few programs in the series some attempt at surprise with some rather unusual effects, I assume in the name of chance. There's nothing wrong with these little effects, except that these sudden intrusions seem to come at the end of nicely shaped paragraphs. In other words, precisely where one expects them.
our world.
So change your world.
And most people are much more conscientious than I am. But here's the interesting thing, Susan. If I see a movie with somebody, I have many more ideas about it. If not that that's the point of going to movies. It's certainly not. The point is pleasure. But if I see a movie with someone, then I talk about it with the person when I leave. And then I actually have ideas in talking, because I hardly ever have any ideas except if I'm talking or writing. Otherwise, it's just dreaming. It's not ideas at all.
There are only a handful of successful SF writers willing or able to depict more egalitarian future societies that take ideas like sharing, solidarity, and democracy seriously.
Opportunity to change your world.
Change your world. Express yourself and your versatility. Change takes time, but you take the time to change.
Whether it's helping less fortunate in your own community, developing personal and career skills, or networking on a global level, you can do more and become more. The United States JCs, touching lives and changing the world.
San Francisco Giants star Bobby Bonds has been diagnosed with lung cancer and is undergoing chemotherapy. The 56-year-old former baseball player is the father of Giants standout Barry Bonds.
Put it into a database, and it's not going to be, from what everything that I have researched to date, an airport system. It is going to be at the point of sale from the ticket. So the travel agent is going to have to go ahead and issue the ticket, et cetera, et cetera. But at that point, when you purchase the ticket, you're going to be flagged. And from what I understand, the travel agent is going to know at that point, based on the database information that comes back, whether or not you're going to be able to fly or not.
Okay, let me just comment on that. That's bad enough. That's horrendous.
Absolutely.
And I think what Al Martin does, given his experience, and again, I have to accept at face value. I don't buy all of it, but I accept at face value what the man says, and I do my own research. But given his experience with
One of that small number is Ken McLeod. Ken is a 40-something Scotsman with degrees in zoology and biomechanics, and a former career as a computer programmer. But his serious postgraduate education occurred in the left. He was a member of the British wing of the Trotskyist Fourth International, and then became a convert to the freewheeling Communist Party of Great Britain. An SF fan and friend to Scottish socialist writer Ian Banks, he was eventually inspired to put pen to paper, and the result so far has been 5 critically acclaimed SF novels.
But if I see a movie alone, I just come out completely, you know, dazed, and I'm still in the movie, but I don't have any ideas about it. So if
the Sphinx back there.
Expires on Sunday.
Over Geneva will be protected by Swiss military aircraft 24. Our second hour today, so stick.
Points from in-theater commanders about certain generals dragging their feet pursuant to the transportation of forces to complete our military table organization in the region. I've heard rumors, you've heard rumors all day today about a possible imminent attack by U.S. forces. I would tend to discount that. The U.S. military invariably does not like to launch a full-scale attack, a theater-wide attack, until its table of organization is complete, and it is not complete at this point.
Socks, and he's kind of doing this kind of
hippie dance. Let's not. And his clothes are all over the stage except for his light blue socks, which you're trying to see. And he's doing this like freeform hippie dippy do thing. And I thought the guy was pretty cool. You know, he's dancing and laughing and nude and he wasn't hurting anybody. So I said, you know, dance on. I'll take this corner of the stage. You can have the rest of your thing. You know. And so anyway, I opened my eyes. And I opened my eyes and he's like right in my face. And I'm like, ah. And he takes his hand and he sticks it down my pants and he kind of cups my balls. And hey, it felt okay, you know. I mean, he wasn't like hurt me or nothing. It felt all right, you know. A little rough, you know. But it's just not the kind of thing I really want to get into with some guy on stage, you know, in such non-intimate circumstances, you know. So I had an arm spasm and I just kind of forearmed him and he kind of backed away and started bleeding all over my beautiful clean stage. And I'm going, hey, what are you doing? Come on, get a napkin for this guy. He's bleeding all over my stage. And finally this Marine came and dragged him off stage and I took some of those flyers they had, those like weekly events things, and I was mopping up the blood and the whole crowd took like an entire step back. They all of a sudden weren't all that into us anymore, you know. And after the show, there's like 8 cops sitting there, you know, by the dressing room. I'm like, I wonder what guy in the band they want to talk to. You are the man who hit the man? Yeah. Why did you hit the man?
In that area, we feel we're extremely well positioned. And the governments involved have already passed some very friendly legislation, so.
Sounds risky.
Well, there's always risk, Mr. Baird. But we've got a seasoned management team in place and an asset liability ratio in excess of 3.5 to 1. No long-term debt. We feel very confident that this is a great opportunity for you, and we'd love to include you as one of our major investors.
At the top of the page. At the top of the page, what does this say?
Get a calendar.
That's right. Get a calendar. I cannot stress this enough. It's a simple item. It's 99 cents at the corner store. But if you look into your packs, reach deep into your packs, you will see that I have been nice enough to include one. See? Yep. That's just the kind of prick I am. Now, you're going to need this calendar. Doesn't seem like much. It's a simple item. It is a small item, but it is going to make all the difference in your world. If you meet a girl, you're going to work an A3 interruption. Let's say an 8-day waiting period before next contact. How are you going to know when those 8 days are up? That's right. You're going to mark the calendar. You're going to mark that calendar. You're going to stick with me, and you're going to stick with this calendar. You're going to work with it. You're going to set goals. If you really, really want to make that friend something else, you're going to have to be tough on yourself. Going to have to set goals. You, sir, in the brown short sleeve shirt. I can't read your name tag. What's your name, please?
Call me up.
And?
Because he's grabbing my cock, officer. Hey, the officer got really uptight. Why was he grabbing your... We're really uptight in saying the word cock. So, why did he grab your... I said, I don't know. Why don't you ask him?
Well, we cannot ask him anything right now. He is in the hospital.
Oh, shit, in the hospital. Yeah, what happened?
Well, you took out one of his teeth, broke his nose, and put 8 stitches in his eye.
Oh.
So I guess you want to kind of arrest me.
Yeah, that's the scenario. Let's go.
Thank you.
Anti-verdurous phallic, were it not for your pouring height, looming in tears like a sick tree, or your ever-gaudy comfort jabbing your city's much-wrinkled sky, you'd seem an absurd babble squatting before mortal millions. Because I filled your dull sockets with my New York City eyes, vibrations that hadn't doomed dumb Empire State did not doom thee. Enough my eyes made you see phantasmal at night, mad children of soda caps, laying down their abundant blonde verse on the gridiron of each other's Eucharistic feet, like distant kings laying down treasures from camels. Illuminations hinged to masculine limbs, fresh with the labor sweat of cable car and Genoa Papa pushcart. Bounty of electricity and visions carpeted on pig bastard night in its spore, like the dim lights of some hallucinating facade. Ah, tower, from thy berryless head I'd a vision in common with myself, the proximity of Alcatraz, and not the hip volley of white jazz and verse, or verse and jazz embraced, but a real heart-rending, constant vision of Alcatraz marshaled before my eyes. Stocky Alcatraz weeping on Neptune's table, whose petrific bondage crushes the dreamless sea harp, gasping for song, all that that piece of sea fails to dream. Tower, I'd a verdure vagueness fixed by a green wind, the shade of mercy lashed with cold nails against the weak weather western sky, weeping on shore for humanity's vast door to open, that all men be free, that both hinge and lock die, that all doors, if they close, close like Chinese bells. Was it man's love to strew the sky with monuments, span the bay with orange and silver bridges, shuttling structure into structure, incorruptible in this endless tie, each age and passions, be it in stone or steel, either in echo or half-heard room? Was it man's love that put that rock there, never to avalanche, but in vision or this imaginary now, or myself standing on Telegraph Hill, Knob Hill, Russian Hill, the same view always, Alcatraz like a deserted holiday? And I cried for Alcatraz there in your dumb hollows, O tower, clenching my pan's foot with vivid hoard of Dannemora. Cried for that which was no longer sovereign in me, stinking of dead dreams, dreams I yet feign to bury, thus to shun reality's worm. Dreams that once jumped joyous bright from my heart, like sparks issued from a wild sharper's wheel, now issued no longer. Were it not for cities or prisons, O tower, I might yet be that verdure monk, lulling over green country albums, with no greater dream than my youth's dream. Eyes of my hand, Queen Penicillia and her tribe, messenger stars, Dr. Deformus back from his leprosy and woe, Thracian ships, joy prints of pure air, impossible for me to betray even the simplest tree. Idiotic Colossus, I came to your city during summer after Cambridge, there also no leaf throbbed between my fingers, no cool insect thrilled my palm, though I'd a vision there, death seated like a huge black stove. Inspired, I came to your city, walked Market Street, singing hawk hawk, the dogs do bark, the beggars are coming to town, and ran mad in Golden Gate into Sausalito and fell exhausted in a field where an endless scarecrow lay its head on my lap. How happily mad I was, O tower, lying there amid gossipy green, dreaming of Quetzalcoatl as I arched my back like a rainbow over some imaginary gulf. Oh, for that madness again, that infinitive solitude where illusion spoke me truth's divine dialect. I should have stayed, yet I left to Mexico, to Quetzalcoatl, and heard there atop Teotihuacan in T. prophetic Huaxicali voice a dark anthem for the coming year. Ah, tower, tower, that I felt sad for Alcatraz and not for your heroes, lessened not the tourist love of my eyes. I saw your black-jacketed saints, your Zens, pot-smokers, Athenians, and coxmen. Though the west wind seemed to harbor there, not one pure Shelleyan dream of, let's say, hay-like universe, golden heap on a wall of fire, sprinting toward the gauzy eradication of swindleresque ink. Finney.
She doesn't feel that way about me.
I don't think there's anyone in this room that doesn't understand that kind of pain, Jeff. And I want to thank you for sharing that with us. Right? Let me tell you what we're going to teach Denise when we put our calendars to work and we set goals. Right? What I say is, Denise, the piece, I mark it down. Oh, I write it up. And you have been warned. Because I have my lasers. I have my tasers, I have my ICBMs, I have my bazookas, I have my jets pointed right at you. Because me and my brothers, we like to celebrate. And on the 1st of May, we celebrate V-Day. And come June, oh baby, it is the lick of my spoon. Come on, guests! We like to celebrate Saints. Suck my big fat fucking sausage! I set goals for myself, and what? I say, I do not want to take it anymore. I will not take it anymore. You think she's your friend, Joff. You come here and you think she's your friend. They're not your friends. Do you really think that she's going to be there when things go bad? Huh, guys? When things go wrong, do you think they're going to be there for us? Oh, you think again. Oh, fucking Denise the Peace. You were gonna give me that cherry pie, sweet mama baby. Oh yeah, but listen up. That is not to say that we don't all need females just as friends, because we're gonna learn later in chapter 23 that having a couple of chick friends lying around is coming real handy in setting jealousy traps. We'll get to that later. Right now, what I want you guys to do is I want you to pull out your blue booklets. Page 18. Now we're gonna be going through this quickly. Don't worry about it, because we're gonna workshop it later. 18, blue booklet. Form a tragedy. Now, this is simple and clean. And if done correctly, can be very, very effective in getting some push. Here we go. Now, you call up your so-called friend. You set a date. Let's say make it around 7:30. You call her on the phone.
Presents! With a double-ass mini cassava stove. With my riff and my frappuccino and mito. Think fast, catch me up, because I throw what I know with the resonance. For your trouble ass, feed it in the wind yourself off of the back of the shelf. Jackass.
We'll be right back. go to the Big Bang and see for sure which idea is correct.
Ideas at all. But if I see a movie alone, I just come out completely, you know, dazed, and I'm still in the movie, but I don't have any ideas about it. So it's a different experience. It's not necessarily a bad experience. I don't mind doing it. I don't feel lonely. But I don't have that after experience, you know, which is being able to talk about it.
Prescott, Arizona, go ahead.
Oh, a very close friend of mine had a conversation last week with an educated woman, I mean, you know, all the right qualifications to have a more complicated view, who said to her, I don't see why we don't just drop a lot of nuclear weapons, atom bombs, on Baghdad and get it all over with.
Linien, dicke, slash, sehr groß, Schrift, Größe, erste Ordnung, slash, kalle, klick, mich, layer, read me, slash, p, id, block, quote, slash, layer, move, table, linien, dicke, frame, head, trenn, linie, slash, head, object, kann, alles sein, von Anfang, Ende.
By eccentric millionaire Arthur Wohm. And Mr. Wohm spent a great deal of his time here in this room, and it was commonly reported to be his very favorite place in the house. Visitors, when escorted to this room, would often find Mr. Wohm lying on the floor, curled up on his side, with his eyes closed and, well, his knees pulled up to his chest. Occasionally, he would even be found sucking his thumb. Because he spent so much time here, Mr. Wohm paid a great deal of attention to the details of the room, and he went through a tremendous amount of effort to make the room as womb-like as possible. As you can see, it's very dark, and warm, and wet. There are no sharp corners anywhere, and most of the walls are made out of a soft material, and the overall effect is one of peacefulness and safety. Most visitors find it very soothing and comforting, and almost all of them say that they feel a great sense of security here. Indeed, many people are rather reluctant to leave at all. In fact, most of you will find that once you left here, you'll be filled with an overwhelming sense of loss. And you will find yourself constantly wishing that somehow you could return. And now, if you'll just step this way, please, we'll continue on with us. Folks, come along. That's right. Certainly, please get the way. Come along this way.
Temperature to plummet.
Load the range from the single number and endless to the keys along the immediate coast. The exception will be across the sheltered valleys where the mercury will drop into the negative frequency.
Body,
speaking,
color, slash, red, text, slash, red, text, slash, green, blue, link, red, blue, text. Gleich red, text ist gleich green, link ist gleich blue, blue, gleich blue, gleich blue, gleich blue.
Bang was just a local event.
Started mine. I was an actor in Charles Dullin School in 44, 45, 46. But these were the years of occupation, you know. It has to, you have to go back to my family story. I had to escape from the Gestapo, and I went to Paris.
That's because your father was Jewish.
Yes, and he was deported. Yes, and then I went away, and I went. There was the French Resistance. I went to Paris, where I was hidden in a house where there were children, and I was a teacher of theater and drawings, and I used to be a student of Charles Dullin and of Etienne Decroux, who had taught Jean Libaro. Etienne Decroux was himself a comedian young to the Copeau school. You know, you have to speak about Copeau, you know. Copeau was one of the great renovateurs of the French theater in the 20s and 30s. And so he has formed a whole generation of metteurs en scène like Dullin, Jouvet, Pitouet. Pitouet was not working with Jouvet, but he belonged to the French cartel. But Etienne Decroux formed the grammar of mime. He teach Jean-Louis Barrault, and Jean-Louis Barrault went to straight acting later, but he did this film of Les Enfants du Paradis, and when I was 20 years old, I saw that film. It had, and then suddenly, it was for me a shock, because I realized how great the impact of mime had been in the 19th century. And since I was a child, I used to play miming with kids, and to imitate Robert Sutton, all the great characters. And I was a mime without knowing it. And later, I wanted to become a student of art, painting student, because I did Les Arts Décoratifs. I entered the French Resistance. I used to carry children to the Swiss border to escape them from the Nazis. And then I went to the French First Army. During the war, I did the German campaign in the Premier Army of Delattre de Tassigny. And when really the war stopped in 45, I created a company playing pantomime and straight acting for soldiers, you see. And when I was demobilized in 46, then I went back to Charles Dullin. I went back to Etienne Decroux to study mime with one, acting with the other. And Jean Libaro at the time formed his company at the Théâtre Marigny and asked me to play opposite to him the role of Arlequin. And he played Pierrot. And this is the reason how I started really the theater to create Arlequin pantomime opposed to Jean-Louis Barrault. Now,
there are real possibilities
how did
for
I
people investigate and probe. But of course, we'll never, unless we build that time machine,
Arlequin,
we'll never be able to go to the Big Bang and see for sure.
I created my own character called Bip into the Théâtre de Poche in 1947. And then starts the history of the modern art of pantomime in the 20th century.
Friend said, but
but those are people there. How could you consider that? And she said, I don't care about anything except American lives. He said, I don't care about anything except American lives. Those are people there. How could you consider that? And she said, care about anything except American lives. After that, and she said, I don't care about anything except American lives.
Blending heady radical politics with artificial intelligence, post-humanism, and space politics.
Appropriate. I mean, you mentioned at the top of the program that I work with Fred Hoyle. I don't know if people know that he died a couple of days ago. And this is one of his ideas, the idea of, an eternal, expanding, infinite universe within which what we call the Big Bang was just a local event. So there are real possibilities that people investigate and probe, but of course we'll never, unless we build that time machine, we'll never be able to go to the Big Bang and see for sure which idea is correct.
With Etienne de Clou, mime was a wonderful experience, but a laboratoire. He formed actors or mimes, but he never had continuous contact with the public.
What, finally, have you retained from Etienne de Clou?
De Clou wanted to establish an esoteric form of mime, which was statuary mime, and not at all the romantic or sort of definition of mimes we had in the 19th century, because Pierrot had a white face, white silk clothes called the souquenille, inserted a cap, a black cap, and he had this figure. He was a legendary figure, and De Clou was much more abstract. He was influenced by the expressionnisme allemand, he was influenced by the Russian ballet, he was influenced by Isadora Duncan.
Just to change the message to 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 the message
Wer auch die Krise im Augenblick sein mag, sie wird durch unseren unabänderlichen Willen.
SSSSF novels, blending heady radical politics with artificial intelligence, post-humanism, and space politics.
Durch unsere Opferbereitschaft und durch unsere Fähigkeiten am Ende trotz alledem gemeistert werden. Wir werden auch diese Not überstehen. Es wird auch in diesem Kampf nicht in Asien siegen, sondern Europa. Und an der Spitze jene Nation, die seit 1500 Jahren Europa als Vormacht gegen den Osten vertreten hat und in aller Zukunft vertreten wird, unser großdeutsches Reich, die deutsche Nation. Thank you.
like about, I'd say about $50,000 a night at his peak.
Die Stadt, die so vielen als Inbegriff harmloser Fröhlichkeit gilt, als festlicher Raum vergnügter Menschen, ist für mich leider nur die lebendige Erinnerung an die traurigste Zeit meines Lebens. Auch heute noch kann diese Stadt nur trübe Gedanken in mir erwecken. 5 Jahre Elend und Jammer sind im Namen dieser Fiakenstadt für mich enthalten. 5 Jahre, in denen ich erst als Hilfsarbeiter, dann als kleiner Maler mir mein Brot verdienen musste. Ein wahrhaft kärgliches Brot, das...
Consider that, and she said, I don't care about anything except American lives.
I'm not as a freak, you know, I wasn't interested in making any kind of medical drama. I saw an interesting jumping off point for an exaggeration of process by we all live, you know, the process of memory, the process of taking present tense information.
Call it an estrogen official. With artificial intelligence, post-humanism, and space politics. While he still considers himself a man of the left, his novels have portrayed anarchist and libertarian ideas so vividly that he has been the winner of 2 Prometheus Awards for Best Libertarian SF. Ken, welcome.
Thank you.
Do you think that you've benefited from a certain amount of capitalist triumphalism and that a socialist science fiction writer is seen today as kind of cool and interesting rather than dangerous and upsetting?
I don't know about that. When I was writing these novels, I wasn't particularly thinking of myself at all as a socialist SF writer. There were much more...
And
the capitalism had definitively won. And however critical I was of socialism, I could very well see that it wasn't the end at all, and that it would come.
Sense of me.
just about going to have to epoxy old Nina Goober to that chair there. Cause Kate and I used to share a line. If you don't have a sense of humor, sometimes it just isn't funny anymore. And so I ran into this poem by the great American poet Mr. Shel Silverstein. Brought it up to the hospital, and old Kate just about rolled out of the bed. It's called The Perfect High. There once was a boy named Gimme Some Roy. He was nothing like me or you, 'cause laying back and getting high was all he cared to do. As a kid, he sat in the cellar sniffing airplane glue, and he smoked some banana peels when that was the thing to do. He tried aspirin and Coca-Cola. He breathed some helium on the slide, and his life became an endless search to find the perfect high. But grass just made him want to lay back and eat chocolate chip pizza all night. And the great things he wrote when he was stoned looked like shit in the morning light. Speed just made him want to rap all day. Reds laid him too far back. And cocaine rose was sweet to his nose, but the price nearly broke his back. He tried PCP. He tried THC, but they didn't quite do the trick. Poppers nearly blew his heart. Mushrooms made him sick. Acid made him see the light, but he didn't remember it long. Hash was a little too weak, and smack was a lot too strong. Quaaludes made him stumble. Booze just made him cry. And then he heard of a cat named Baba Fats who knew of the perfect high. Now Baba Fats was a hermit cat, lived high up in Nepal, high on a craggy mountain top, up a sheer and icy wall. But hell, says Roy, I'm a healthy boy, and I'll crawl or I'll climb or fly till I find that guru who will give me the clue as to what's the perfect high. So out and off goes Gimme Some Roy to the land that knows no time, up a cliff no man could conquer, to a cliff no man could climb. For 14 years he climbs that cliff, and back down again he'd slide. He'd sit and he'd cry and he'd climb some more, pursuing the perfect high. Grinding his teeth, coughing blood, aching and shaking and weak, starving and sore and bleeding and tore, he reaches the mountain peak. His eyes blink red like a snowblind wolf, and he snarls the snarl of a rat. And there, in repose, and wearing no clothes, sits the godlike Baba Fats. What's happening, Fats? Says Roy with joy. I've come to state my biz. I hear you're hip to the perfect trip. Please tell me what it is. For as you can see, says Roy to he, that I'm about to die. So for my last ride, tell me how can I achieve the perfect high? Well, dog my cat, said Baba Fats. Another burned out soul who's looking for an alchemist to turn his trip to gold. Well, it isn't in the dealer's stash or on the druggist's shelf. Son, if you would find the perfect tie, find it in yourself. Why, you jive motherfucker, says Roy. I climbed through rain and sleet. I froze three fingers off my hands and four toes off my feet. I braved the lair of the polar bear. I tasted the maggot's kiss. And you tell me the high's in myself. What kind of shit is this? My ears, before they froze off, said Roy, heard all kinds of crap, but I didn't climb for 14 years to hear your sophomore rap. And I didn't climb up here to hear that the high is in the natch. Now you tell me where the real stuff is, or I'll kill your guru ass. Okay.
But those are people there. How could you consider that? And she said, I don't care about anything except American lives.
Professor, I again. always been there, but that our Big Bang is a bubble within that something.
Auch eine andere Macht, die sehr gewaltig war in Deutschland, hat unterdessen die Erfahrung erleben können, dass die nationalsozialistischen Prophezeiungen keine Phrasen sind. Es ist die Hauptmacht, der wir all dieses Unglück verdanken, das internationale Judentum.
And that it would come back, and in some ways I'm rather pleased to see that something called anti-capitalism is once again in vogue.
Wir verdanken das internationale Judentum.
And Buddhism is once again in vogue. And in some ways I'm rather pleased to see that something called anti-capitalism is once again in vogue. I kind of expected that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the anti-globalization movement's been pretty much the fulfillment of a long-time Marxist prediction of that globalization would breed its own seeds of its own discontent.
Yes, and globalization is only just beginning. We're in a situation now where for the first time the majority of people in the world are the largest minority of people in the world are wage and salary earners, more wage earners than there are Europe, for example. You know, and you unscrew the top, and suddenly all the bubbles appear. Now, this is completely unprecedented in history.
I actually think that's a view that has quite a lot of credibility in this country.
Thanks.
No metaphysics over here. Just trying to get it straight, ideologic-wise. Not easy to do these days. All the confusion and all. I mean, black was white. It was dark at noon. Decades ago. What do we do now? I mean, if we turn it all the way around, it'll approach correctness. And that, of course, can't happen. Not visibly. So what's a man to do today? And it all ended in 45. Now we're just hanging around visibly. Gary Geiserman right here doing some hanging from a bad fruit tree full of strange cranial bullseyes. I'm not even an American Southern Negro. But there's a noose for me somewhere. I'll find it. NewMetaphysics.com, of course. With the W's, put it to the man. Since the man won't give me a static IP to have a website with, it's in the Constitution, and they won't give it to me. So they've got to hang my money in a noose, swing it around till I strangle myself in my own private personal paper bag of American Now. And I'll punch myself dopey trying to get out of that thing. So don't worry about it. I'm ensconced. Gary at NewMetaphysics.com for the message from the Garcia. Gary at NewMetaphysics.com, spelled American. And of course, studio475.com/NewMetaphysics. Some download. Dropping it on down. Hanging around. Trying to figure out what to do when you can't really figure it out anymore, but secretly know exactly what's going on, up to the point of departure, of course. The working man's philosophy, end of the world, where it's supposed to be, and right there. Just not this media echoes from the grassy isosceles point of confusion so popular today. And the metaphysics is new, heed not. You can bet your life on it. And I think you already have.
Anything for American lives.
Body stackers, thick two niggas, Master P and Yoshi.
Hold it, homeboy. I don't need to hear that word.
Sie werden sich nur erinnern an die Reichstagssitzung, in der ich erklärte, wenn das Judentum sich etwa einbildet, einen internationalen Weltkrieg zur Ausrottung der europäischen Rassen herbeiführen zu können,
I don't need to hear that word.
Not you, no.
Crackers, body staggers, thick two niggas.
Not you, no. Sie werden sich nur erinnern an die Reichstagssitzung, in der ich erklärte,
I mean, it's what gets people to refer back to a rather intemperate earlier questioner, why it would never occur to him to question the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Hold it, homeboy. I don't need to hear that word.
Living to get older with a chip on your shoulder, except you think you got a grip, cause your hip got a holster. Ain't no confessor, so buster, you better just shut the fuck up. Try to listen and learn.
Oh, oh, cut it, Coolio. I've had enough with the mouth and the language.
I'm almost done.
Finish it up without the lip.
Check that eagle. Come off it. I'm the prophet, the professor. I'ma teach you about the worm, who eventually turned to catch wreck with the neck of a longtime oppressor. And he's running from the devil, but the debt is always gaining. And if he's worth being hurt, he's worth bringing pain in. When the sunshine don't work, the good Lord be no raining.
As you will have seen in a previous tutorial, you choose color fills for shapes by clicking on the color swatch here.
Sense, you know, the fizzy drink has been there forever. I mean, as long as it's been standing in your fridge anyway. And then the bubble appears and that's the big bang.
Cosa Nostra, who invented that?
Who cares?
Wasn't it Salvatore Lucana, better known as Charlie Lucky Luciano?
He pressed his bleeding wrist to my mouth, said firmly, Louis, drink.
The
think, Joe.
I did notice the dialogue after the love scene when they talk about that time.
There's so many subtle things in that. I just was realizing.
That shit will help you solve the case.
Hi, I'd like to get an order for delivery.
Phone number?
818-725-4424. Delivery?
Phone number?
Playboy magazine?
Yeah.
Okay, one of those. And Penthouse, the magazine?
Yeah.
Do you have that? Okay, one of those. And Hustler?
Yeah.
Do you have that?
Yeah, sir.
Do you have that?
Yeah, sir. Is
that
it?
Yeah, that's it.
You still want the peanut butter bread and cigarettes?
Yeah. What?
The total is $31.90. 30 minutes or less.
Okay, thank you.
Is that cash or credit card?
Cash.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
It is when you say, where's the beer? And I say, in the kitchen. You know, the kitchen is the place where the woman has always been, you know, and finally, in some way, we've been able to get out of the kitchen.
Jahre sind vergangen, seit der Grund, wie du sagst, davon.
Thank you.
Mute, which was, of course, based on the work of Karel Čapek.
Yes, but it was a terrible bore to produce, actually. As you know, virtually all of it takes place beneath sea level in the location shot where I paint, quite frankly. We all got the bends at one time or another, and Sir Kenneth, of course, is a stickler for detail and an absolute brick. Well, based on scrupulous, indeed, I might say.
The very thought that this might have saved American lives is enough for him to find it completely justified to have killed all those civilians.
But he does have this thing about working below 6 fathoms, it seems. So quite often we ended up with Lloyd Bridges in the sand. It simply settled her voice over, but I really shouldn't tell you that, old boy, so please don't mess.
Well, it was a revelation in terms of production technique, nonetheless, sir. But it must have been a relief to you personally to get to work on the much more intimate 6 wives of Gregor Samsa.
Yes, well, of course, one's fascination with copy does grow apace, doesn't it? I mean, it was an enormous challenge to search out a visual counterpart to his imagery, but I must confess to you that there's much that I do differently where I give him the chance again. I really don't think that Vanessa quite worked as a praying mantis. She's a very dear girl. Her father's an old friend, and I must say I thought Lynn was absolutely splendid as the knocker at the castle door, but then one is never satisfied, is
Right. No, indeed. May I ask you what you have in store for us this coming season?
Well, I'm going to attempt an original script called Asymptotica, which is, in effect, what the Schoenbergians would term a retrograde inversion of the Kafka theme.
Well, I'm afraid you're going to help me out with some of those terms, Mr. Wyman.
Oh, quite. Well, as I understand it, and mind you, I'm no musician, retrograde inversion simply suggests the theme rendered upside down and backwards at the same time. I must say that I find musical terms enormously helpful in clarifying one's relation to symbolic structure, don't you know? And as far as the title itself, Asymptotica, girl.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that.
It's the most rightful presentation, really, but I find it absolutely irresistible because what it defines mathematically is the proposition of non-intersecting lines, you'll say. But I've adapted it to describe a diminution of movement in relation to one's previous best effort and employed it to suggest that by adopting as a yardstick the ratio of that diminution, that one is, in effect, absolutely impotent in relation to any finite goal.
Well, now, you're going to have to give me an example of that, I'm afraid, Mr. Wynan.
Well, it is a bit of a muddle, isn't it? But let me try to explain as best I can. Let's imagine that you and I are standing in the center of, well, what should we say, of a room, perhaps, and with a bunny rabbit standing between us. Then, let's imagine that the nearest doorway is, what should we say, 15 feet away. Well, now, for some ridiculous reason, the bunny rabbit decides that you and I represent a threat to his survival. And he manages to jump half of the way towards the door, towards the only escape hatch that he sees, towards freedom as he reckons it, you see. Then, because his resources are depleted, let's say, through exertion or nerves or metaphorically through the aging process, whatever you will, in his second attempt, he's only able to cover half the distance to the first. In other words, 3 3/4 feet dead against 7 1/2. And then his third jump is similarly halved and so on ad infinitum. Well, the unfortunate creature never will, in fact, reach the door, you see.
Oh, yes, I understand the phenomenon mathematically, but what I don't quite understand is its connection with the themes of your previous TV work, Mr. Wynan.
Well, of course, one doesn't like to be backed into corners in an interview, and especially about work in progress. As a matter of fact, you're a naughty boy for asking, actually, but I did say it was a retrograde inversion of the Kafka theme, and what I tried to convey by that was that whereas in Kafka the principal themes are upwardly mobile, as you North Americans like to say, though ultimately, of course, built upon the quicksand of despair, as I remarked to a chap from the Lister just the other day.
That's a remarkably apt description.
Oh, thanks awfully. I rather fancied it myself, actually. But as I say, Kafka's themes are upwardly mobile in the sense that the castle always is at least one mountaintop beyond the author's telescopic lens, so to speak.
Yes, that's very true.
In Asymptotica, I wanted to shape a mirror image of the same kind of quest. A quest every bit as fixated by frustration, don't you see, but dominated by the supposition that one's interior landscape, in this case, the room which Bunny Rabbit is standing and the doorway of which he sees quite clearly, is every bit as inaccessible in relation to one's ultimate aspirations. Of course, I have no idea whether it will come off as one would wish. The hair has been frightful to frame because his natural response would be to jump at least 16 feet at first go, which, of course, leaves us all out of frame on the opening shot.
But we're going to try some slow motion technique with him, so perhaps you will honk him out in the watch. But really doesn't know at this stage.
Well, Mr. Winant, I can only say that I feel both honored to have been privy to such insights into your working methods and just a bit guilty for having persuaded you to talk perhaps prematurely about those fascinating production techniques.
Oh, dear boy, you really mustn't fret. I've carried on in quite the same way over tea more times than I care to count, actually. But it is a very real danger, you know, talking about one's methods and all that. Rather like the centipede who was asked in what order he moved his 100 legs, and never having given it a thought previously, couldn't move at all thereafter, so one really must take care, mustn't one?
Well, your reference to the centipede and his 100 legs brings me to the other purpose of this call, Mr. Wynne.
Oh, yes.
Well, we've all read about your extraordinary achievements in the area of track and field.
Say, well, that's hardly worth the price of the call, old boy. I'm no Roger Bannister, I assure you, though he's an old and very dear friend.
Well, your modesty is legendary, of course, Mr. Wynne, but it is remarkable that a man as deeply involved in probing the collective psyche of mankind through literary and visual symbols should engage in such an extrovert activity as track, and consistently manage to better the 4-minute mile in the bargain.
Well, quite frankly, old chap, I don't find the two activities at all irreconcilable. On the contrary, there's theme and counter theme, if I may borrow from my musical friends once again.
Of course.
Well, you see, if you're fortunate enough to stumble onto a proper metaphor for the futility of life through your art, and I do feel I can claim to have staked out some rather worthwhile territory in that area.
No question of that, sir.
Well, then, one tends to become hypnotized by one's own metaphoric conceits often and not, you know. That's the problem with art, really. You see, it takes such very indirect routes to achieve quite ordinary destinations often and not. And I think this is because we stopped believing in magic years back. Well, perhaps younger chaps today have come back to it a bit, I don't really know. But for my generation, at any rate, I'm afraid that the transcendence of spirit was a phenomenon more talked about than felt. And in a sense, symbolic logic, you say, thanks to Mr. Freud and his friends, became our substitute for magic, and we tried, some of us, quite desperately to believe in it. But in sport, by comparison, one still has leg room, if I can be fit myself. There's a bit of a pun there. Of course, one has to be a bit systematic when one trains and all that, but there's always a chance for magic to enter into it. There's always the possibility that some mysterious magnetic field will just simply stop on the clock for one precious moment, defy all the laws of gravity and probability, and as it does so, pull us inexorably toward it, you see. The 0-minute mile, then, for sure. The very magic the poor Kafka always looked for and never found. The magic that our poor Bunny Rabbit, in his terror, should be quite unable to believe in, though, as I think I've pointed out, the beast is being frightfully uncooperative at the moment. Well, I don't know whether that answers your question.
Indeed, yes. Mr. Winan, it's been an honor and a pleasure and indeed a revelation to talk with you and to tape your comments for the scene, and I do thank you.
Sure.
to think that if there's anything at all in the idea that the working class is interested in its own, then we're going to see increasingly over a very long time, but we are going to see political consequences of that.
One of the things that you're pretty critical of in your first couple novels is green Luddism and anti-technological pessimism. There's been a big strain of that in the anti-globalization movement as well. The movement against economic liberalization, economic globalization, is often seen as synonymous with a movement against technology.
Yeah, and it's one of the aspects of it that I'm still very much opposed to. I'm not an anti-globalization myself in that sense at all, and I'm entirely in favor of free trade. And the only thing I disagree with about free trade as currently constituted is the idea of the paradoxical idea that some committee sitting in Washington or wherever can decide what counts as free trade and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I think that democracy and national independence are important, and that if countries want to harm themselves by inflicting protectionism on themselves, then so be it.
Certainly they were not military targets. I simply feel that Americans, there are American lives, and that's why we have had up to now, I wonder if we're going to be able to keep it up in Iraq, a policy of minimal casualties. The idea is to conduct a military operation so basically no American soldiers die. American soldiers die.
We present the confiscate the cops!
Have a great lunch!
From the show Prop House, she's here for the interview.
Hi, it's really nice.
I admire your work.
Thank you. I have us set up in a
It's not very safe for you here.
I finished one of these seminars, Guinevere. I swear to fucking God. I mean, I am Batman. I'm Superman. I'm like a fucking action hero the way I feel. Like, I could walk out of this room right now, Guinevere. I could go down the hall and walk down the street, and I could pick up any sweet little honey that I meet that has even 1 second to stop.
All it takes is 1 second.
Just 1 second, girl. 1 second. One glance, one hesitation, one subtle look my way for me to know. And then it is bing, bang, boom. Oh, my God. Oh! I'm away on a tangent. I tell you. I get so fucking jazzed at these seminars. See, because I am what I believe. I do as I say. I live by these rules as religiously as I preach them. And that's why I am getting the nasty left, right, center, up, down, sideways. The Battle of the Bush is being fought and won by Team Mackey.
We're going to start rolling now.
What? Well, I thought we were rolling. Come on, go, 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 Guinevere. I am firing pearls at you here. Listen, I want you to know that I'm not succeeding in the bush because I'm Frank T.J. Mackey. You think about this. I mean, there are women who want to destroy me.
I find that hard to believe.
Well, it makes it very difficult. Twice as hard for me. You know, I mean, there's some little hottie that I'm moving in on, knows me, knows my, you know, my plans and my schemes. You know, she's going to want to fuck with me. She's going to go back, you know, to her friends, you know, yada, yada, yada. You know, Frank T.J. Mackey, he ain't all that, you know. He ain't all that. Didn't get me. So me, I am, you know, I'm just, I'm full afterburners, full throttle through hottie heaven.
Okay.
Just dodging left.
Okay, Frank,
dodging
yes, I
right.
understand.
Just dodging left and right. These bullets from these terrorists. Babe, beauties.
Calm down. Take it easy and be a good boy. Okay, oh. Mr. Mackey? Thank you. Now you sit back there. Put your microphone on for me, please.
Yes, ma'am.
So we can do this then, all right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Okay, let me start by asking you...
Just 1 second.
Mr. Button.
Thank you. What do you want to know?
I've been right, and you'll be proud of it. Jesus Christ, you'd think there never was a Michelangelo, where they treat people.
Did you know that an Italian invented the telephone?
Alexander Graham Bell was Italian.
You see what I'm talking? Antonio Meucci invented the telephone, and he got robbed. Everybody knows that.
Who invented the mafia?
In a rather perverse kind of way, thought this was great. His father, was the baddest man you could be. And that's a picture of Willie's father, Butch Bosket, while he was at Leavenworth, at that time doing time for a federal bank robbery charge.
Did Willie and his father, Butch, ever meet?
No, they never met.
American soldiers died. Look at the way the what happened in Afghanistan. American soldiers happened in Bosnia. American soldiers die. And in Kosovo, soldiers die. And in Kosovo, the idea is to bomb from on high and to lose no. I mean, there are more Americans in the recent military. Adventures of the United States have died in road accidents than are from so-called friendly fire, that is, mistakes on the part of American bombing missions, and have actually been killed by foreign soldiers. Americans.
What?
La Cosa Nostra, who invented that?
Ayers.
Wasn't it Salvatore Lucana, better known as Charlie Lucky Luciano, who organized the five families? Lucchese, Gambino, Bonanno, Profaci.
Is there something you want to say to me?
thought it was just nice new order, get ready, because we're getting ready for the next phase of our musical lives, physically and mentally.
Amazingly, they looked very much like each other. People who knew them both, the relatives always said that Willie looked just like his father. They were both incredibly smart. They had a lot of mannerisms that are alike, the way their eyes look, the way their mouths work, but they never met. They did. The first time they ever got in touch was when Willie had been arrested at the age of 15 for murder, and he was in a juvenile prison. And the warden, in effect, arranged for Willie to get in touch with his father.
How?
Well, initially there was a strange coincidence. Willie didn't know where his father was. He only knew this legend that his father was a murderer. And then the New York Daily News ran a story on the front page identifying Willie's father as a man in prison in New York State. And Willie wrote to the man thinking, God, this is my father. And he was very excited. Turned out to be a man with the same name as Willie's father, but it was a relative, another man who was also in prison for murder, but who was a cousin of Willie's father. And he wrote back to Willie and said, I can find your father. I think I know where he is. And that other man got a letter to Willie's father at Leavenworth. Willie's father then finally got in touch with him.
If you spent 300 hours with Willie Bosket, what are your impressions of him? And what kind of things did you talk to him about?
Well, the first thing that surprised me was how smart he is. I spent a lot of my adult career working in... That's Willie as a small boy. And the bottom picture is of Willie with one of his teachers in a reform school when he was a small boy. Willie was incredibly bright, incredibly charming. When he found out I'd worked in Asia, he began quoting to me from Ho Chi Minh and Mao Zedong. And it wasn't just jailhouse rhetoric, he was quoting quite accurately. And when I talked to him about what I was trying to do to understand why he was so violent, he got enthusiastic about the project. He said that he would like to cooperate, and the reason was because he had a niece, at that time she was 7, named Danielle, who was very bright also, but who was beginning to get in trouble. She was playing hooky at school. She was staying out from home. She was being sent to the family court, even at the age of 7.
And Willie was worried she was going to follow his path. And he thought maybe if I could understand what had happened to him, why he was so violent, it might in some fashion save her. So he gave me the records that he had collected over the years, his juvenile criminal records, his psychiatric records, things that normally would be sealed and that a writer, researcher would never find, he provided to me. And then I set out to try to find his family. And when I would find information, I would come back usually and tell it to him. We'd talk it over.
Do you have all those 300 hours on tape?
Soldiers die.
Over.
We can see you now. We see you right over north of us. We can see the whole craft. You look like you're moving south towards down towards San Pedro.
Right.
So,
it's on tape.
Come down to it, be very hazardous, even if I wanted to. There are old houses, there are open fields, over.
There's no open fields, only houses? Okay, if you keep coming this way, we're heading this way.
So it's quite a simple thing, but it's very pertinent. Almost feels like you're starting again, and in a way you are starting again.
Back there, you know why? Because it's Sphinx back there. Back there. And then, it's interesting, all the women look like Jamie Farr, all of them. And
really?
I'm a big Jamie Farr fan, and I love women, so the combination just turned me on Major.
Right.
And, see, Major, that's right from MASH, too. Then it was interesting because you had to tip, like in the bathroom at the airport, you had
right.
to tip for toilet paper.
Right.
And then basically you're negotiating. There's a guy under your stall reaching, and you kind of are exchanging the money at the wrong moment and
sure.
hoping you can just give me the money, give me the paper. And I made a mistake. I didn't understand the currency, and I gave him $17 for 3 sheets of toilet paper. And I realized you're just better off just using the currency.
Sure, sure.
The reactive mind would calculate as follows. Apples are worms. Are bites. Are holes in apples. Are holes in anything. Are apples. And always are worms. Are apples. Are bites. Reactive mind has just one equation. A equals A equals A equals A equals A.
Thank you.
So we have a situation which in American life is worth, is priceless, and other people's lives have very little value, not just in a traditional society. The poor Iraqis who have suffered so much are going, and at the hands of Saddam Hussein, are now going to suffer more.
To wake from that dream, how would you know the difference between the dream world and the real world? Have you ever had a dream that you were so sure was real? You're the one that has to walk through it.
Of something is healing, and a dose of it that isn't appropriate for this particular individual or system is going to be poisonous.
Set out the Noble Eightfold Path, Buddha's prescription for dukkha.
Have you ever had a dream that you were so sure was real?
The Noble Eightfold Path is really in three divisions, one of which concerns itself with understanding, might almost say intellectual understanding of the doctrine. The one is concerned with conduct, and the third part of it is concerned with state of consciousness or meditation. Now, to summarize them briefly,
One, the first stages of the path, such as a right view, or I prefer to translate the word samyak, not so much as right, but as perfect in the Greek sense of telos, or complete. And thus, to have a complete view is a view which does not take sides, which takes the middle path, which in other words does not go off to extremes, and so on. The part of the Eightfold Path that is concerned with conduct. Buddhism is often represented as having a very exalted ethical system, and this is true in a way, it does. But also one must recognize the difference between Buddhism and Christianity, as any rate as Christianity is ordinarily taught, is that these ethical ideas are not commandments. They are really forms of expedient conduct. The Buddha counseled his followers to take upon themselves certain obligations, say of not killing, of not stealing, of not exploiting the senses, of not getting drunk or intoxicated with poisons, not lying. Not because these were against the will of God or against the fundamental laws of the universe, but because they are inexpedient forms of conduct for a person who wants to wake up. After all, if you get thoroughly doped up, you're not liable to be very wide awake. And then, finally, the end of the path, the last stages of it, are concerned with one state of consciousness, with being the process of what is sometimes called meditation, or of bringing one's mind to its maximum awareness through clear recollection, and then finally the attainment of what is called samadhi, which means integrated consciousness.
Spot 203 on the cat in condition 2, and cut him as soon as he's in position.